Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Dialogue. I'm your host, Mark Levine. 2 weeks ago, I hosted a raucous caucus. We were talking about the wacko ideas of the Republican candidate for governor, Bob McDonnell, and he did have some very crazy ideas. He considers feminism an evil. He doesn't like working women. He wants to punish gay people. He had a whole host of really wild ideas. But in the process of talking about his wild philosophy, I have to say I was very impressed by the callers we had who brought up any number of philosophers, and it showed to me that actually it's okay to talk about philosophy on the radio, at least with regard to WPFW listeners who may be more intelligent than others, I don't know, but certainly are more cognizant of philosophy, of political views. And one of the things that interests me when you talk about your views and people define themselves, I'm a liberal, I'm a progressive, I'm a conservative, I'm a fundamentalist, I'm a socialist, I'm a capitalist, I'm a libertarian. People use labels all the time. But it seems to me that labels are always a little inaccurate because some people simply choose their political opinions like you might choose a laundry list. Like you might choose, oh, you root for the Washington Redskins because you happen to live in the Washington, D.C. area. Some people's political philosophy comes from their parents, from their church, from whatever their friends are believing. And some people really believe in the laundry list and don't know why they believe in the laundry list. Let's talk about some basic liberal values, things that you normally ascribe to people who are liberals or progressives. Okay, one would be a concern for the environment. Another would be the idea that a woman has a right to choose whether or not to give birth to a baby or not. One would be reasonable restrictions on guns, for example, or maybe minimizing a prison for people who do nonviolent crimes like drugs. These are all sort of liberal ideas. The idea that every American deserves basic health care or an education or food on the table. These might be considered liberal ideas. The idea of open government and the rule of law. But why are they liberal ideas? Why aren't they conservative ideas or libertarian ideas? Where do your views come from? I want to talk this hour about where my views come from. Because while no question all of us have views coming from our own natural prejudices, I can't deny that some of my views come from my family and my friends and my background and my religion and where I'm from geographically and my gender and my sexual orientation and all of that. I don't deny that. At the same time, I think as human beings, we can come and discuss basic human values. And we may not always agree. That's okay. But I think that everyone that espouses a value should be able to defend where that value comes from and should be able to defend it without resort to, my God tells me this, but to basic logic, to basic human principles. So I want to talk this hour where my political philosophy comes from, and I want to hear from you this hour where your political philosophy comes from. And if you agree with me, that's great. If you disagree with me, that's fine too. Let's try to use logic to explain where our views come from. So let me start with what a liberal is. Now, liberal comes from the same root as liberty or liberation. It means freedom, basically. And sometimes I think liberals allow the conservatives to use the word freedom too much when it's actually the essence of what being a liberal is. But so let's take that as my first basic principle, that people should be as free as we can let them be. And I think that's a generally good thing. We shouldn't restrain people. People should be free to speak out, to do whatever they want to do. So that's the first basic principle. But immediately, you'd be saying to yourself, what do you mean, free to do anything you want? Are you free to burn down someone's house? You're free to kill someone? Well, no, you're not. Why not? Well, logically, your freedom has to end when it can take away from someone else's freedom, right? Famously, I can throw my fist as far as I want, unless your face is in the way, then I can't throw my fist there because my freedom would then take away from your freedom. So I don't believe in anarchy. I don't believe that people should be free to do whatever they want to do. Obviously, you cannot be free to do something that harms others. But if you're doing something yourself that doesn't harm anyone, well, I think then you're free. So what harms someone? What doesn't harm someone? Well, obviously, there's physical harm. We talked about the fist. What about the fact that there are people that have different religions that don't want you to practice your religion, right? There are people that say, fundamentalists, perhaps Bob McDonnell, the Republican candidate for governor of Virginia, would say, if someone practices a religion different from my own, that takes away from my freedom. I feel less free because someone else is preaching or practicing something I don't believe in. I say, sorry. Because I would define freedom as your own personal freedom. That means that you should be able to practice whatever religion you want. You should be able to do whatever consensual things you want to do, as long as you're not harming someone else. That doesn't give you the right to tell someone else what to do. That doesn't give you the right to say, you're a woman, you shouldn't be working. That doesn't give you a right to say, you're gay, you shouldn't be married. That doesn't give you the right to say, you're of a different religion, I can force you to be my religion. See, then you're impinging on someone else's freedom. But you should be free, I think, to do whatever you want, whatever you can do. So what about people who consent but don't know enough to consent? What about children? I certainly believe that two adults can consensually do pretty much whatever they want to do behind closed doors, as long as they both agree, as long as no one's impinging on someone else. But then I read stories in the newspaper about, for example, the famed director Roman Polanski, who admitted to having sex with a 13-year-old girl. And he says it was consensual. Now, she says that she was drugged and so forth. But let's say he's right. I don't think he is, by the way. I think the girl's telling the truth. But even if he were right, can a 13-year-old girl meaningfully consent to sex? I don't think she can. Because I think that part of this freedom comes from the idea that you know what you're doing. So with this freedom has to come knowledge, right? A 13-year-old may consent to sex and yet later on in life realize how harmful that is. Whereas once you're 18 or 20, and we can disagree on this, right? We can agree with the principle that adults have freedoms that children don't, but disagree on where that age is. Some people think that, you know, that maybe the drinking age should be 18 or 17 or sex should be 16 or maybe it should be up to 21. We can disagree on that. But the general principle that people should be free to do whatever they want to do unless they're harming someone else wouldn't apply to people who can't meaningfully consent. It doesn't apply to children. It doesn't apply to people who are mentally ill, right? You can't force someone who doesn't have their faculties about them to do something that would be unfair. So let's go beyond this. Let's go to economics. Where do my political philosophy come from with regard to economics? Well, first of all, I have to say that I'm not against capitalism. And I'm going to look at Michael Moore's movie. I often like his work. I doubt that he's fully against capitalism either, but I haven't seen the movie yet. Capitalism, in some doses, I think, is a good thing, right? Think about the simple farmer who's selling his tomatoes on the street corner, right? For him, selling his tomatoes, you go, you buy his tomatoes, you're better off, you're happier, you'd rather have those tomatoes than the $3 you give him. And he's got a bunch of tomatoes, he'd rather have the money than the tomatoes. You're both better off. If you had a system that allocated everything to everybody, it would be less efficient. Basic capitalism, I think, works. But I'm not a pure capitalist. Because if you look at conservatives, for example, they will tell you that any time you interfere with the free market, any time you interfere with the invisible hand of philosopher Adam Smith, the thing that says that we all buy things we need and makes everybody better off, that you're messing up the system. But then I can look and see all the points where the system fails, like the most recent gambling and credit derivative swaps a year ago that brought down our economy. Or I can look at something very basic. I can look at the fact that we are not all born equal. The Declaration of Independence says that all men are created equal. We know, of course, Thomas Jefferson didn't include women in that, and he was also a slave owner, so I guess he was talking about white men that owned property. But let's leave him out of it for now and just examine the principle. Are all men and women born equal? Well, no, we're not. Some of us are born rich. Some of us are born poor. Some of us are born with natural talents that will take us high and far. Some of us are born with less of those natural talents. So where does freedom go? A conservative will tell you, an Ayn Randian, a libertarian will tell you, you know, tough luck. If you're born rich, you deserve to be rich. And if you're born poor, you deserve to be poor. And there are conservatives that will actually make that argument. There's even some on the Christian right that are turning the teachings of Jesus on its head and actually arguing that if you're wealthy, well, you're more deserving. You deserve the money, right? If you're poor, you don't. God favors those that are rich. Of course, it's exactly the opposite of what Jesus said when he said it's easier for a camel to go through an eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. Jesus was no fan of the rich, but some of these fundamentalist churches, I guess, don't really follow his teachings. My point is this. You could argue, and conservatives do argue, that pure capitalism means that, you know, let the chips fall where they may. If you're rich and you stay rich, fine. If you're poor and you stay poor, fine. That's what freedom is all about. Let me tell you why I disagree. Let me give you a liberal, progressive argument for disagreeing with that. It's not fair, I think, to judge us all from the accident of our birth. Every single infant, everyone, every single person on this planet was once an infant. And an infant, one day old, cannot live by him or herself. He or she needs our help. There's not a baby on earth that could survive without well-meaning other human beings taking care of that baby. And conversely, on the moment of your death, you need help too, right? The times that you are most helpless are the moments after your birth and the moments before you die. So none of us have our entire lives the ability that some conservatives or Ayn Rand might think we have to take care of ourselves. No, we always have parents and grandparents and a village and friends and our community to take care of us. And we've had people help us along the way. To me, that means we have the same responsibility to help future generations along the way. Someone helped us. We would not be here exercising our freedoms if we hadn't had people before us helping us get to this point. And that's true of every single person on the planet, including you, including me. To me, that means that you have an obligation to help others. If you just take from others and you don't give to others, if you're purely selfish, the way some conservatives recommend we all be, then you can't have a future planet. You can't help the next generation. And there are people, there are conservatives that say, well, okay, we'll help your children, but don't help anyone else's children. Right? Isn't that the argument over universal health care? If you're rich and your kids have health care, the conservatives say, who gives a damn about the poor? Let them die. But what made the rich rich? Was it all because of their talents? For some it was. That's why I believe in some capitalism. But for others, they were simply born into it. So I think, for my political philosophy, there's got to be equality of opportunity, not equality of outcomes. I don't believe in a pure socialist system. Again, you may disagree with me. If you do, we're going to give you a chance to call in just a few minutes at 202-588-0893. I don't believe in equality of outcomes because I think that if you have that, it doesn't give an incentive for people to work hard. But I do believe in equality of opportunity. What does that mean? Well, everyone should be able to eat. We have more than enough food to feed everyone on the planet. We have more than enough shelter to shelter everyone on the planet. And yes, we have more than enough medical care to treat virtually everyone. Now, you know, I understand there are some diseases that would cost millions and millions and millions of dollars to treat. I'm not talking about those. But for the lion's share of humanity in the richest country on earth, the United States of America, everyone could have decent health care, and the country wouldn't go bankrupt. And we know that's true because that's the way it happens in Canada and England and France and Australia and Japan and Germany and Sweden and, well, virtually every industrialized country on earth except ours. So I'm not asking for the moon. I'm simply saying that in order to be free to do everything you want to do, you've got to have food. You've got to be healthy. You've got to have shelter. These are minimum basics of humanity. And I don't think they're that hard to defend. So where else do conservatives and liberals differ? And by the way, I do want to give out the numbers again and invite you to join in and tell me where you agree or disagree. 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. One of the things they differ on is redistribution of wealth. Now, if we had 100% confiscation of wealth, I'd be against that. I'd be against that because then I don't think people would work very hard. The most socialist system in the world that I'm aware of is the kibbutz in Israel. The kibbutz is a small usually a farming village where all the people have agreed that they would all work hard, they would all do what they can, and then all take care of everybody else. So the farmers grow the vegetables, and the people in the food hall serve them, and there are people that clean the houses, and there are people who raise the children in some cases, and there are people that teach and so forth, and they all, everyone does everything. And no one gets any more than anybody else. Everyone gets whatever food they want and so forth. And for those people who live there, it's a utopia, I guess. I don't think that works for a broader society because you're always going to have people who work harder and you're always going to have people who slack off. So I myself believe in a mixture of capitalism and socialism. But I also recognize that if you have too much wealth that's congregated in super wealthy people, that harms the economy for all of us. Let's take the simple example of a factory owner, someone who's a multimillionaire and he has a factory that makes cars. And I use this example a lot. If we gave the factory owner, as conservatives, as Republicans argue, give the businessman money and he'll create jobs. So let's give this guy that sells cars and let's give him $10 million. What's he going to do with that $10 million? Will he make jobs? The way Republicans say? Why should he? He's got $10 million. He's not going to buy anymore. He already has 6 yachts. He has all the food and luxury and homes he needs. I mean, maybe he'll buy a 7th yacht. That won't employ too many people. Now take that same $10 million and instead of giving it to the factory owner, give it to people who buy cars. Give, $10,000 to 1,000 different people, middle class people, poor people. Well, they may decide to go out and buy a car. After all, they have 2 people working in the family and only 1 car, and now they have enough to buy a 2nd car. So now, because of the demand for cars, that factory owner, even though he hasn't made a penny more, will recognize he'll make more if he builds another factory. And then he will build another factory to make the more cars because of the increased demand. And then the people he hires to build the cars, the other factory, they'll go out and they'll spend money and there'll be the famous multiplier effect. And lo and behold, the economy gets a boom. That's how the stimulus package worked. You see, it's really a very basic principle of economics. Rich people are not the engines of the economy. I repeat, rich people are not the engines of the economy. It's middle class people, lower middle class people, even poor people are the engines of the economy because when they get more money, they spend it. But see, conservatives, they just don't want to believe that. What else is part of my political philosophy, which I consider a basic liberal political philosophy, one of which is the rule of law? I believe in the rule of law. I believe in democracy. I think that we should follow the law, and if we don't like it, we should change the law. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't unfair laws, and if the law is unfair enough, sometimes you have to practice civil disobedience the way that, the civil rights movement did, and be willing to go to jail for your beliefs. But in general, you should follow the rule of law, and if you don't like a law, change it. And perhaps that's also a difference between a liberal point of view and what might be considered a more left point of view. My goal is not to overthrow the United States of America. My goal is to work within the system to make it a better place. That doesn't mean that we don't have problems. One of the biggest problems we have is money controlling the system. That's why I and Terry and Garland firmly support public financing of campaigns. But at the same time, I don't think we will succeed in overthrowing the U.S. government. To me, you have to look at practicality as well. And that means that some of the changes that we want won't come all at once. We have to get them piece by piece. And that means voting and doing grassroots movements and doing the kind of, political work that makes things happen. So sometimes when you hear me disagree with Terry, Terry's taking perhaps the more idealistic view. And I'm saying, half a loaf is better than none. So I try to really make, in my philosophy, I try to make it sort of all come together. I do the same with countries, right? A country should be free to do what it wants unless it impinges on another country. You do have the right of self-defense. That's part of international law. That's in the United Nations Charter. It's the reason why I felt the war in Afghanistan was justified and the war in Iraq was not. Iraq did not attack us. but people based in Afghanistan did. Now, is what the way we're fighting Afghanistan now, is it the proper way to go? We can argue about that. We may well disagree. Maybe the best way is to withdraw troops and occasionally bomb a terrorist camp, Al-Qaeda camp, from the air. I don't know. Those are all, you know, respectable differences of opinion. But the general idea that you have the right to defend yourself, I think, is a liberal value. It goes with the idea that you're free to do whatever you want unless you're harming someone else. I also think it's a liberal value to care about the environment. And that goes back to the idea that we're not born completely self-sufficient. As I said, we're born helpless infants. And therefore, what we have to do in order to survive is to have people take care of us. So we can't use up this planet for the future generations. We've got to care about this planet. We've got to care about things like global warming. We have to care about things like making sure the environment is still around for our future generations, just as our forefathers helped and mothers helped it for ourselves. So let me give out the phone numbers, and kind of I'm curious to know where you agree with my political philosophy, where you disagree with it. Where does your own political philosophy come from? The number's 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. How much freedom should people have? Where does that freedom, where should it be limited? What do you think? Let's go to Tony on the line. Tony, welcome to Dialogue.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm enjoying your show, but I have a very serious question that I would like to have answered, and I've never, of all the people who follow the liberal agenda, because I know that both parties are corrupt and there's no difference between one or the other. What I'd like to know is, when you all use 9/11 and the attack of Afghanistan as our reason for continuing the war, I haven't seen one bit of evidence that proves that someone in Afghanistan attacked New York. I've heard sloganeering. I've heard I've heard Osama did it, and then I'll see three and four different CIA pictures of Osama bin Laden. Some of them may be him, some of them not him. Not one iota of evidence that says that Afghanistan pulled off the World Trade Center, where if the World Trade Center attack was investigated, it would more than likely prove that it was an inside job. Scientists have shown that there was thermite and other high-tech weapon explosives on the scene and in some of the bombing material and the molten metal, the way everything was shipped off. But I noticed that the liberals will use the same George Bush excuse for killing innocent people in Afghanistan, and not mentioning that pipeline that they were trying to get their hands on.
Okay.
And
you've raised a lot of issues.
Comment. That's very interesting to me that you will repeat the left and the right both. Like Obama, he's killing people. He's showing the society that he can kill just as many brown and dark people as Bush could kill. But the liberals are not saying anything against that.
Tony,
that's fine as long as Obama is doing it, because he's nice and he's good and he has a nice suit.
Let me respond to you, because you raise a lot of very interesting issues. I do disagree with you, but let me tell you why. First of all, I disagree with the idea that both parties, there's no difference between them. While there are corrupt members in every party, Republican, Democrat, Green, you name it, I think to say there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats, you just don't have your eyes open. That doesn't mean I agree with the Democrats all the time. But I do agree with the Democrats some of the time, and I agree with Republicans almost none of the time. Sometimes, very, very rarely. To say there's no difference, you'd have to have a closed eye to, for example, the whole healthcare debate, where I think the Democrats haven't gone far enough. But clearly, a majority of Democrats, for example, support a public option, support going toward universal health care, and Republicans are all against it.
So
I think the president does support a public option. He's afraid he doesn't have the support.
Does, he would have done it.
The president. Hang on, Tony. Hold on, Tony. The president is not a dictator. The president does not have power to single-handedly
do... Well, he was a dictator when he gave all that money to the bankers, and 90% of the Americans said, no,
you keep raising different
to
issues, Tony. I got to respond to you because I got about six issues, and I also got three callers.
Okay, I'll hang up and listen, but I just made my point. And address that 9/11. Show me some evidence.
I'm going to talk about that, too.
Okay,
I promise.
Bye-bye.
I'm going to get to all your issues, okay? First, the issue about the parties being the same. I think Obama, I take him at his word, that the president does support a public option. And his view is that he doesn't have the votes for it, which is why he's backing away from it. The Constitution says the president can't enact laws by himself. He certainly is not a dictator. He needs the Congress. And if you heard John Conyers on our show last week, John Conyers, who very much supports a public option, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, he felt that there were not 50 votes in the Senate. Not the 60 for the filibuster, but even the basic 50, and that we, who support it, have to do our job and get our senators and so forth. I happen to be a Virginia resident. I need to get my two on board, get the Maryland ones on board to get the democracy working again. So the president can't do everything by himself. But to say there's no difference between the parties, I really think is a fundamentally defeatist attitude. It's a way of retreating into your shell of saying, I'm not responsible for anything that goes on in the country. I'm not going to vote. The Republicans and the Democrats are the same. Well, that's certainly not true. And I don't care which Democrat you are. I don't care whether you're a Lieberman Democrat who's barely a Democrat at all or whether you're a Kucinich Democrat. You know, if you like Dennis Kucinich, great. Vote for him in the primary. But to say the parties are the same, nothing can be resolved, I think, frankly, is it's not true because of American history. You can look and see that we have had changes, right? We did have the Great Society under Lyndon Johnson and the War on Poverty. We did have the Civil Rights Movement. We did have Social Security created in the 30s and Medicare created in the 60s. We have had progressive things succeed. So before you throw up your hands and quit and say all the parties are the same, I think you've got to play a role. You've got to join in the debate. Now, let me talk about the other issues you raised, because you did raise a lot of them, Tony. Let's talk about September 11th. Osama bin Laden has appeared on television and said that he did this. Now, maybe you think he's some secret CIA agent. I don't know. There's all kinds of crazy conspiracy theories out there. But there is no evidence that 9/11 was an inside job. I'm sorry. There's none. What there is evidence is that there are a bunch of people who were trained in Afghanistan and were working with the Taliban who set out to kill Americans and succeeded in killing 3,000 of them. Now, when I say that, that doesn't mean I like George Bush. I never did. That doesn't mean that I believe that we should not have any restrictions on war. I certainly believe we should. But it happens to – you can't just sort of say I think it's an inside job and not give any evidence. And I've heard all this argument before, and frankly, I think that the argument discredits those of us that have legitimate qualms with the Bush administration, you know, spying on everybody and torturing people and the war in Iraq and legitimate things to say, oh, I think it's an inside job, when there's really no evidence of it. Al-Qaeda has admitted it. They have praised it. They have said it's wonderful. They have admitted what they've done. I don't really see any dispute on that. What else did he raise? The bankers? Well, that's a complex question. George Bush obviously began the bailouts. President Obama continued a few of them. And to the extent he did, he tried to have protections so we know what's going on. Did he go too far? He may have, particularly with AIG and so forth, but he was merely continuing what Bush did. And I don't plan to be an Obama apologist either. I'm not saying everything he did was good. But it was a difficult problem. He had the economy was falling apart, and we were leading toward the greatest recession since the Great Depression, and we had a credit crunch. And I think that Obama could be much firmer as it is if he had more support from those of us helping to influence Congress to do the right thing. Got a full list of people that I'm going to talk to, 202-588-0893. We'll be back with all your calls right after this. Welcome back. I'm your host, Mark Levine. I've given you the outlines of my political philosophy, and I'd like to know where you agree, where you disagree. Where does your political philosophy come from, and how does it differ from my own? Let's go to Nick. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing good. What are your thoughts?
Good. Hey, I'm out here in Western Maryland. I was listening to your program, and man, I had to call.
Okay.
First off, my political background, I guess I'm a liberal, but I'm definitely not a progressive, so that must make me a conservative now.
I don't like labels. Why don't you tell me what you believe in and what you disbelieve in, and we'll go from there.
Well, I believe that an individual should be paid for the work that they do. and that a person who does better work should get paid better than someone who does less than better work.
I'm okay with that. I think that's basic capitalism, and I at least agree with that.
Well, see, when I jumped on the phone, it was when you were talking about the millionaire automobile manufacturer.
Right. Here's the problem, and let me make my point clear, and then I want to hear from you. When you concentrate wealth, when a society concentrates wealth into too few people, it harms everybody. Because just look at the United States of America, right? Since the 1970s, we have had the rich get much, much, much richer, and the poor middle class stay the same or get poorer. And what that does is if you concentrate all this wealth into a very few people, practically, and I'm arguing strictly practically, totally apart from morality, which I also believe in redistribution of wealth for morality reasons, but sheerly as a matter of practicality, an economy dies if you have only a few very rich people. That's why you have Latin American countries, for example, that don't do very well when they have only a very few people have a lot of money. Now, to be clear.
We have more millionaires in America today than we've ever had before. So we have a lot more people making a lot more money.
But that's not the proper way to measure it, Nick. That's just a number. Okay, right, there's inflation, right? The best way to look at it is to see how much the top 1% owns versus the rest of the country. And right now, the top 1% has some 30% of the nation's wealth. And if you look at the top 10%, it's more than half of the nation's wealth.
Well, those are the people that hire me. I'll tell you what, a poor person
why
has
do they
never
hire
hired
you,
me
Nick?
For a job.
Nick, why do they hire you? They hire you because there's a demand. I don't know what you do for a living. But whatever you do, you're hired because there's demand for whatever you produce or whatever service you do, right? And that demand doesn't only come from rich people, does it? I don't know. What do you do, Nick, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm a clearing contractor.
A clearing contractor. So you build homes? You build?
So we go to land and we clear it and we prepare it for whatever it's going to be.
For a home or a business. Okay. If you only had a few very wealthy people, you wouldn't have enough people buying homes and buying businesses and you wouldn't need to clear land. My point is not – I don't believe in confiscatory taxes, but I do think that to say that every American needs to have just equality of opportunity, a chance to work hard and get paid for the work they do and to pay for their education.
Absolutely, and we have to make it easier for the average person to be able to go out there and do things. Right now there are so many rules and regulations and laws and things that people have got to do in order to open up a small business. It makes it prohibitive.
Well, they're good regulations and they're bad regulations.
Up a small business. In Washington, D.C., people ought to be able to open up their own little shop and their own little house and to do whatever they want to do, have a grill, have a restaurant, you know, whatever. But the rules and the laws are so many. And the paperwork you have to go through is so dense, it just keeps the average person from being able to start their own business.
I don't know about that, Nick. I see people doing their own businesses every day in the District of Columbia. Here's my view on regulation, all right? You're never going to convince me that all regulation is bad. I don't think you think that all regulation is bad. I mean, you don't want people polluting your rivers and streams. You don't want people, putting dangerous stuff on the sidewalk. I mean, there are things that people do that are dangerous. Some regulation is good. If you're telling me that there's excessive regulations in some way, you know, maybe I'd agree with you. But you have to give a specific.
It's a very large business. Look, we only have one or two large food producers in America. There's only, you know, you have your Tyson's Foods, and when something goes wrong in one of these big businesses, it goes wrong throughout the entire country. 100 years ago, when we had little butcher shops in every corner, if one butcher shop had a problem, that only affected a little bit.
But now, Nick, you're making my argument.
Hey, this guy's got a dirty shop. But see, Nick, we're going to go to the next guy. So the businesses, capitalism itself regulated itself.
But see, Nick, you're making my argument now. When you have a few people control too much, that gets dangerous, whether it's food or water or you know, the credit derivative swaps, whatever it is. If you have a monopoly, if you have a few rich people, whether it's, you know, John Rockefeller and Standard Oil or Carnegie and steel, whatever it is, dangerous.
I want to be a millionaire. I want to go out there and I want to make my business so good that everybody wants to hire me, and that's what I want to do. I want to be big.
That's fine.
I want to go
be a millionaire, but don't be a 100 billionaire.
People to work for me. I don't think that just because I'm successful that I've got to give my money to someone who isn't.
Well, let me give you a shocking statistic, Nick, that may surprise you, and then I'm going to move on to the next caller.
Okay.
The average amount of taxes that the richest 1% pay in America, and I'm not talking about just income tax. They only want to talk about income tax.
I agree with you. I know where you're going with this, and I agree with you 100%.
Okay, well, let me give you my statistic.
The tax laws have definitely got to be changed.
Let me give you my statistic. If you look at the richest 1%, they only want to talk about income tax. But when you add it all up, income tax, which is better for the poor than the rich, Social Security tax, which where the poor pay more than the rich, and Medicare tax, where the poor pay more than the rich, and sales tax, where the poor pay a greater percentage of their incomes than the rich, and you add it all up, you'll find the top 1% pay about 31% of their income in taxes. And you know what the average person pays? About 30%. There's very little difference. And the right wing talks about, oh, these confiscatory taxes. There's very little difference in the tax burdens between the super rich and the middle class and even the lower middle class. So I'm not really worried about confiscatory taxes. I appreciate your call, Nick. I got to get on because I got some other callers on the line. But thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Let's go on to Sean. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm good.
Let me turn down my radio.
Okay.
Okay. I was listening to the discussion. Great discussion.
Thank you.
By the way.
Thank you.
Well, there's maybe a few things I would like to say. First of all, I don't like labels either. I don't think that I get so upset when I hear liberals or so-called progressives or what have you, when you have to label good deeds, something is wrong. I've always felt that whole argument about liberal and conservative was set up by conservatives, because if you put a label on something, all you really have to do to defeat a particular social cause is to attack it with a label.
So what's your political philosophy,
Sean?
Well,
my thing is, let's not identify ourselves as progressive and liberal, because there's nothing wrong with wanting to have a level playing field out here for everyone, and it's no label to be placed on wanting fair housing and all those different things.
I agree.
And things that you find that the conservative umbrella don't include. But that aside, when I heard you talking about basically what this current administration is trying to do, I agree with what you're saying. I just and I'll take my answers off the air. What do you think? Do you think that President Obama, do you think he's facing a dilemma where there are things even more powerful than what the American people can see? I mean, we only can really act on, I go beyond outside of the box for my own information, but some people only get their information, unfortunately, from a Fox or a CNN or something like that. Do you think that he's been approached by those who we know are very powerful, that you'll never see their faces in a magazine, never see their faces on a television or anything, and that basically some of this agenda that's being acted out now it has to be acted out in the way that it's being acted out?
That's a great question, Sean, and I appreciate the question. The question is, has Obama been approached by these interests? I have no doubt in my mind that President Obama and every one of the 435 members of the House and all 100 senators and Eleanor Holmes Norton as well, that all of them have been approached quietly and loudly, but certainly quietly, by powerful business interests. We would have no trouble getting a public option. Heck, I don't think we'd have any trouble getting universal health care if we didn't have powerful pharmaceutical companies, health insurance companies, people who have vested interests in the current system, who make 30% of every health care dollar and stick it in their pockets, trying to protect their interests. That's what big business does in America. That's what they do with their lobbying dollars. And if a Supreme Court case that's coming around the pike, the Citizens United case, goes the wrong way, we could have even more corporate dollars in our system. So there's no question in my mind that Obama and 535 members of Congress have all been approached by these big money interests, and they've all said, well, either explicitly or with a wink and a nod, that if you don't vote the way I want you to vote, you're not going to get support in your election. That's the problem with financing our campaigns by private interests. And it's frankly, it's a thing that Terry and Garland and I all strongly agree on, that we need public financing of campaigns. And at the very least, it has to be open and honest. One of the things we complained about Dick Cheney was he had all these oil companies in a room when they drafted the bill where the taxpayers bailed out the oil companies, and he still wouldn't tell us who's in that room. So I want to know who's lobbying the president. Now, President Obama, to his credit, has put out lists of people who visited the White House. He's put out lists of people who are lobbying him. And the question is it affecting President Obama? Well, if there are people, and I think perhaps Tony, the first caller, is one of them, who thinks that every single politician is corrupt. We can't believe in any of them. All the parties are alike. We might as well just either give up and go home or have revolution. That's not me. I do believe that politicians make a difference. I do think there's a difference between President Obama and Newt Gingrich. There is a difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. I think President Obama wants to do the right thing. I really do. I believe him. Now, maybe you can call me naive, and if you want, one of you will call in at 202-580-8893 and call me naive. I actually believe that President Obama wants to do the right thing, but he needs help because he can't do it alone. He needs all of us to lobby our members of Congress. So, yes, the lobbyists are out in force. They're approaching everybody, and they've got tons and tons and tons of money. But thank God in America, we still have votes that usually count. They may not count in Florida in 2000, but most of the time they still do count. And still today, although it's changing, still votes can be more important than dollars. And if you were to call your senator, your representative, and say, I won't, and I understand D.C. is a, you know, we don't have representation in D.C. But at least if you live in Virginia and Maryland, if you let people know that you won't vote for them if they don't vote for a public option, for example, then your voice can have as much power almost as a health insurance lobbyist dollar. So I guess it's a long answer to Sean's question. Yes, people are being approached. Yes, these money interests are doing their best. Yes, they're doing it in secret. Yes, they're ginning up these town hall meetings. But that doesn't mean democracy in America is over. The clearest and best solution for the long term is public financing of campaigns. But even in the short term, simply using your voice, you can have the same power, or at least almost as much power, as some of the moneyed interests do. Let me go to Monica. Monica, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, Monica. Talk to me.
All right. Well, I just want to say, well, I was born and raised in Denmark myself. And, I mean, it's a pretty socialistic country, but as you were saying, there is, like, equal, like, you know, there's no equal, like, pay, but there's equal opportunity, you
right.
know, like, everybody can go to college for free, and I'm a college student myself, and I just think that the U.S. needs, like, serious, like, change, because I just see so many, like, people at community colleges, and they're just struggling, like, three jobs, you know, and they just have to pay. And I don't think it's fair that you would have to pay just to go to school, you know? Like, it's like a business almost.
Well, I agree with you. I think if you're going to have equality of opportunity, there's
uh-huh.
certain very minimum basics you need. You need food and
yes.
shelter, you need health care, and you got to have an education. Because if you don't have
yes.
an education, you're not going to achieve anything you in life.
Exactly.
Whether and it's,
yeah.
and I don't mean necessarily being a college professor. You may need an education to be an electrician or a plumber or a car mechanic, whatever it is. You got to know what you're doing, particularly today when, you know, in America, we're much more of a service-oriented economy instead of a manufacturing economy. There are not too many factory jobs anymore. Let me ask you this, Monica. You said you were raised in Denmark. You
yes.
were given a free education by your society.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel, since they gave you something that, you know, you didn't necessarily deserve, you were just a kid, do you feel, therefore, that you have to give back to your country, to Denmark, and to future generations that follow after you because you were given something?
I mean, definitely. I'm all about giving. You know, I feel this is a very selfish nation, honestly. Like, I'm getting very tired of it. Like, I always think about just moving back because I feel like people are just too focused on their own, like, path of success, money, 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 you know, but there's so much more to that. And if people can realize, I mean, there's so much beauty in it, you know, just helping out people. I feel like here it's like you just want to compete. Oh, my neighbor got a big TV. Now I got to get a bigger TV, the car. If you look at people's storages, I mean, people leave the lights on. People have the air conditionings on all the time. You know, I babysit a lot myself, and I just see this big house, and there's, like, a light on every room, and I'm just like, why, you know?
Well, I agree with you, Monica.
I
look, I think the irony is that people talk about, you know, Nick was talking about, oh, no, you're taxing someone to give to someone else. When you receive from your society, you want to give back to your society. I would think that Monica and people like you can actually give back far more than you ever got in the first place from your government. You know, go back to John F. Kennedy, right? Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. When you're the and as I have been, the beneficiary of some wonderful parents, of some wonderful society, community that helped raise me, you want to give back and help your community more. And I just think that's a much better paradigm than the entire selfish one. I completely agree with you. Thank you for your call, Monica. I really appreciate that. 202-588-0893, Africa. Africa is on the line. Welcome.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. What are your thoughts?
My question to you was, you were talking about democracy.
Yeah.
Do you see what happened in New York recently whereby the Iranian leader could not even have a function in three major hotels for his people, where Gaddafi was prevented from putting up a tent so he could receive his guests? Do you call that democracy? Calling Iran and Libya rogue nations. Do you think that democracy when this country
Iran and Libya are rogue nations. They weren't chosen by their peoples.
The United States is not a rogue nation.
We have our own rogue nation things too. But to me, there's a huge difference between governments that are chosen by the consent of their people and governments that are not. I mean, George W. Bush was not chosen by the people.
Who told you that election was not held in Libya?
There are no free elections in Libya.
Was George Bush chosen by the people here?
No, he was chosen by the Supreme Court, and that made me a radical enough to move here to Washington to try to make a difference.
But I'll tell you this. You had to wait until the George Bush situation before you became a radical?
Yeah, because prior to the election of 2000, all right, I disagreed with his father, for example, George Bush Sr. I didn't vote for him. I voted for Dukakis, but he was fairly chosen by the people.
If you say you believe in democracy,
I do.
How can you stop Ahmadinejad.
He wasn't elected by the people.
May I finish, sir?
Yeah.
How can you stop them from traveling throughout the country as Netanyahu, who comes from Israel, could travel throughout the country? How can you do that?
Well, one of them was elected by his people, and the other one was not. You saw the election in Iran. You saw what happened when the people marched and they said they wanted their votes counted, and they were mowed down in the streets, including that young woman Neda, who, innocent bystanders.
People are mowed down in the street in this country on many occasions. I'm saying if you believe in democracy, Gaddafi should be allowed to put his hand up. Well, he rented a facility, so should Ahmadinejad have his function in hotels.
If you're talking about the idea that people who come to speak at the United Nations should be allowed to stay here, that's diplomatic immunity. I'm okay with
and
that.
George Bush's administration.
I do see a difference. I do. Look, I but no one the, no the one has been no one has been more condemnatory of George W. Bush and his administration
than
I have.
George Bush, I'm saying,
but what
the
I'm saying is,
administration is doing the same thing. The policy is the same.
No.
The current administration did the same thing to Ahmadinejad when he came here the last time.
Look, the Iranian people, themselves, are actually, they're pro-American. They're pro-democracy.
Speak for what's happening over here.
I can speak for what I see happening on the streets in Iran.
Why didn't you let Gaddafi and Ahmadinejad move about the country the same way that Netanyahu moved about the country?
I do not consider people who are dictators to have the same... I do not treat them the same as people who are democratically elected leaders.
Why men be ruling since 1492?
Well, see, you're not talking about democracy now. You're talking about, I mean, look, if you're talking about the fact that, what, the Native Americans don't have a vote and we killed a bunch of Native Americans.
Black folks never had a vote either. I don't let Native Americans, you stole from black folks and you accuse other people of being rogue nations.
You're raising two very different points.
No,
Africa.
I'm saying the same thing.
No.
If you believe in democracy,
right?
Why don't you let Ahmadinejad and Gaddafi move about the country as freely as Netanyahu? We're not talking about the election.
Okay. Because I think that you can go into all kinds of things that have happened in American history or any other country's history. But my bottom line is this. When you have a government that is freely elected by their people, and it means that they can choose from at least two parties, maybe more, and the people themselves, their votes are counted, and they get a voice, and if they disagree with the government, they can march rather than be mowed down in the streets. That's a democracy. I don't have to agree with everything a democratic country does. but I respect the fact that there are democratically elected leaders across the world. And there, you know, in Turkey, there's Muslims, and in every country, there are democratic countries and there are dictatorships. And I do not respect Gaddafi or Ahmadinejad because they have achieved their position solely through power and not through elected votes. And I do see a difference, and I think we should promote democracy wherever it occurs. Let me go on to Mike. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
I just want to touch on something you said before. You cast the 9/11 off as crazy conspiracies, and there's no facts or evidence to go behind it. Here's a fact. There's nanothermite that was found at the site of the Twin Towers. Larry Silverstein did an interview with PBS the week after, and on that interview he said, we decided to pull it. And he's talking about World Trade Center 7.
Oh, God. See, I've heard all these things for the last 5 years.
World Trade Center
number 7
in there. And what I would encourage you to do is go to Google and type in 20 minutes with the president plus Prison Planet bibliography, and you can read off 20 facts that
I'll tell you the official story
of 9/11.
When this first happened, when these theories were first brought up, I was on the radio. This is back about 2 years after the events when I first started hearing them. And I went in and I explored everything. I read all the things. I saw the tapes. I examined and I talked to some engineers. And everyone I talked to I doubt, Mike, that you are a structural engineer. I know I'm not. But the structural engineers I've talked to tell me that it was all perfectly natural. Here's the problem I see.
Here's the problem I see with the
9/11 conspiracy theorists. Here's my real problem, and I've had a problem with it ever since I first heard these theories. There are horrible things the Bush administration has done that no one can dispute. Things like torture, things like spying on millions of Americans, things like invading a country that never attacked us in Iraq, things like lying about Saddam Hussein getting nuclear weapons. There's all these things that are absolutely provable that no one disputes the facts on. I mean, you can dispute on what you call torture or not, but you can't dispute that people were waterboarded. And you can't dispute the fact that Gore won the election in 2000 and it was taken away from him. So there are all these real horrible things that happen. And then there's, I'm sorry, but I would call it speculation. There is the idea that, well, maybe Bush planted explosives in 9/11 or had people did it and all kinds of things that I've seen zero evidence of. Absolutely zero evidence of.
Here's my problem. Actually have 120 peer-reviewed publications that have been published that are structural engineers and people who have doctorate degrees saying that it's physically impossible.
If you want to post those names on my website, you go ahead. It's radioinsidescoop.com. Go ahead and post it and tell me where you – but I have looked into all these things. I have looked into it, and what do I find? They're not peer-reviewed. They're not professors. They're not respectable people. There's some wild ideas out there. There's some crazy ideas that, a plane didn't really hit the World Trade Center at all or the Pentagon at all. Well, then what happened to those people on the plane? Here's the problem. When you have these ideas – and I'll tell you what the conservatives do. They mix these, what I consider wild ideas, and I do, with legitimate questions we have about September 11th, like why Bush didn't do more to protect the nation or why our planes at NORAD didn't go up fast enough. There are legitimate questions about it. When you mix it with the wild ideas that, you know, Bush was trying to kill 3,000 Americans and there's, I've seen no evidence of it, when you do that, what it does is it tends to diminish all our arguments. Then you have the right wing saying, aha, see those crazy liberals talking about torture, talking about 9/11 conspiracy theories, and they mix it all in, which is why I wouldn't be surprised to find out, and I have no proof of this, but I wouldn't be surprised to find out that some of these 9/11 conspiracy theories themselves are coming from right-wing people specifically in order to diminish the legitimate arguments that we liberals have with the Bush administration. There's so much that's legitimately out there rather than all this speculation that I just want to focus on that. And you know, the other stuff I've seen. You know, the simplest there's another philosophical thing. It's called Occam's razor. And this principle is that the simplest explanation for something is usually the correct explanation. Usually that's what happened. And so, yes, I do believe that the guy who claimed to Osama bin Laden, who claimed to get 19 people into planes to take down American buildings and the people who were flying, that Colleen Rowley, the FBI agent, found that all of them actually did what they said they did. All right. Last caller, Don. Don, welcome to the show.
Hey, man, I just got one simple question that I'll take the answer off the air.
Okay.
Where are the Americans for public option health care?
Ha! I'm glad you asked that question, Don, because I and WPFW and Garland Nixon and John Conyers' office and some others, including Mark Thompson on Sirius, we've already committed, and I'll announce it here first, to do a citizens town hall, a public option town hall. You are absolutely right. Where are we? We need to be out there, and I am committed, along with many, many good progressive radio hosts, are committed to leading the way, to bringing us out of the woodwork. The great majority of Americans still support a public option. The great majority of Americans still support a real health care insurance reform, and we have been too quiet. You're absolutely right, Don. We've been too quiet while a few very loud people on the far right wing have made all the news with their town hall meetings and everything. We need to do the same ourselves. So, Don, you've given me a great segue into announcing this, and we will give more details. If you listen to Dialogue every Tuesday at 7, we will let you know how this is coming along. But we've already started to work to bring citizens' town hall meetings, our community, the people who want a public option, the majority of Americans, the majority of people who voted for President Obama and the Democratic Party, so that our voices are heard. Because I guarantee you, as I said to, I think it was Sean, that the health insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, they're spending all their money behind closed doors to get their way. We've got to be open and honest and have masses of people defending the public option. It is the greatest civil rights battle since the 1960s, in my humble opinion. The idea that every American deserves basic health care. And the irony of the whole thing is that people like Medicare. A recent poll showed that 94% of people who get Medicare like Medicare. And Medicare is cheap. It is cheaper. My parents are elderly. They pay less for Medicare than I pay, and I'm relatively young and healthy. So Medicare is cheaper, and if more people are in the system, then it will be more financially sound. We need Medicare for all. Medicare for all who want it. So, Don, I'm really glad you called in, because I and many, many good hosts at WPFW plan to do our best to bring out people like you and people across America to support a public option. And I hope, Don, that you and every listener to my voice has called your representative and demanded the public option. We need it for universal health care in America. Hope you enjoyed tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed listening to my own political philosophy. And now when you hear me in the Raucous Caucus arguing with Terry and Garland, you'll have at least some idea of where I'm coming from. Tonight's show was engineered by Jasmine Blackman and Cassandra Giddings. I want to thank them both for being in the booth. And I want to thank all of you loyal Dialogue listeners. We'll be back with the full Raucous Caucus next week and every Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. This is Mark Levine signing off.